Welcome, all you believers, idealists, skeptics, and all those who question the universe around them. I'm Bailey.
And I'm Ty. Welcome to Cult Talks Conspiracy.
Before we unseal this file, we wanted to fill you in on some really exciting news.
For as little as $3 a month, you can be a part of our pursuit to hashtag question everything by clicking the support the show link found in the show notes of each episode.
Your support would mean the absolute world to us and help us dive deeper into the mind-blowing conspiracies you, Ty, and I all love.
Thank you for joining us, seeking the truth, and as always, question everything.
You're listening to a Cult Talk Network podcast.
For 31 days, the dead walk among the living. Things that go bump in the night no longer hide the shadow. And your darkest fears leave your mind and stand before your very eyes. A shiver up the spine, a sting on the neck, a howl in the night. This is Cultober, and this is Cult Talk Conspiracy. Welcome, all you believers, idealists, skeptics, and all those who question the universe around them. I'm Ty.
And I'm Bailey.
And this is Cult Talk Conspiracy Encounters, our special event we're doing to celebrate our favorite time of the year, Cultober.
Yes. This episode is extra spooky.
Maybe.
We have a spooky guest, too. Ooh.
Yeah. He is very spooky. He's kind of like a ghost. But I've seen him, so I believe in him.
That means you believe in ghosts?
This one, I'll say.
This one?
He is looking kind of pale on the video. I know people can't see it.
I have a terrible ring light right now that is just not doing me any favors.
I thought your tips were frosted on your hair when you got
Oh,
on.
God.
Are they not?
2001 call.
Yeah, I was saying,
just hit the second tower. Yeah.
He's going through his Lance Bass phase.
Oh, my God. It is particularly spiky.
It is. Our guest today, as we've been doing with Cultober, we had the Farthest Reaches guys on talk about vampires. We had the Cult of Lore guys on to talk about werewolves. And today we have the editor, Cult Talk Conspiracy, and Spotify musician.
Oh, God.
Yes! Or Riley Esler.
Riley Esler. Yeah. Who I guess everyone but us knows him as.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Well, we already had a Riley, so I was like, no, he's got to be Essie.
Yep.
Yeah, I still am unsure of where the origins of us calling you Essie came from.
I think it was Bailey. She was just like, we can't have this.
I'm pretty sure. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was Bailey or Mike. I don't know. I just know that's what I've...
Because I'm pretty sure it was a idea. Shocker.
Oh, wow.
It was just kind of like, we can't have this confusion. No, change his name.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, it stuck because I had no idea. I thought that was just like a common nickname he had amongst his family and friends. But nope, it's just us.
You guys are special. Great.
We've named him.
Yep.
Yeah, and we're talking about ghosts today. Ghosts are a very contentious topic here on Cult Talk Conspiracy.
That's only because you refuse to believe in them.
They're boring.
They're not boring.
They are, out of all the high strange phenomena, ghosts rank pretty high up there on boringness.
Things that can just disappear at will and just move things around.
You're right. That's terrifying. They can move stuff.
Like a butcher knife through your throat. Like,
okay.
Let's think about the context here.
I guess. I don't know. Out of all the paranormal entities that I've came across and heard of, I'd say ghosts rank pretty low on my interest scale. But they're spooky, so
they are spooky.
You can't have a Halloween event without talking about ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah. But here we are. We're going to talk about ghost encounters. Bailey, do you want to kick us off here? Do you want to start us off with your
sure.
with your spooky tale?
My spooky tale is very spooky. Thank you. I actually decided to talk a little bit about the Bell Witch, because we didn't pick witches this year. And I thought to myself, well, what is a, you know, American legend? And, you know, what is kind of a little bit different?
Does that count?
And, huh?
Does that count?
Yes, because they call her a poltergeist and a spirit and a witch. She's all of the things.
Well, I didn't know we were just throwing rules out the window here. I could have...
I didn't know
we could just call anything a ghost.
It's not calling anything a ghost. There are certain like ghost criteria. Like, okay. Essie, help me out here. Like, isn't a poltergeist a ghost?
I mean, they are different words. So don't different words mean different things?
None of you guys said anything when I told you I was doing the Bell Witch.
I think it still basically counts, right? Like, what is the difference between a poltergeist and a ghost?
That's a good question. A better question is though, do they have ghosts in Canada?
Yes, but they are exclusively of moose. There is no people ghosts. If we have something that can like appear and disappear and come and go, that's just called a father.
oh my God.
I love my dad. He's great. I'm actually going to visit.
Your dad is awesome. Yeah. Dad's very good.
Yeah, your dad's pretty cool. You can hear him on an episode of Cult Talk Conspiracy if you look through our backlog here.
Yeah.
You can hear Riley and his dad talking about sea monkeys.
Yep, stellar sea monkey.
Yeah. They're cool. I liked those. That was a good episode.
Yeah, thanks for letting me do that without telling you guys that I was going to do that.
I had seen it earlier when like, because I get all the notifications like from the Gmail, and I seen like there was a file transfer from you called Sea Monkeys, and I was like, what is this? I was like, I don't know what this is. And I was like, did we do something about monkeys I forgot about? Like, I was like, what is this? And then Mike told me, I was like, oh, it's fine.
I just don't love surprises, man, but I loved that surprise. That was beautiful. It was gorgeous.
It was a very fun episode. Oh, absolutely. Never afraid of that.
Yeah. Well, come on up to Alaska tomorrow with me.
Okay, that's fine. I love Alaska. Alaska is amazing. What's going on in Nome, Alaska? Does he know anything about that?
I mean, that's where the Iditarod ends. Other than that, I have no idea anything about Nome, Alaska. People are going missing,
like all over Nome, Alaska. I mean,
it's Alaska. There's a lot of nothing.
Yeah, Alaska. Yeah, Alaska and missing people is like hand in hand.
Yeah, they just...
But where are they going?
It's a big place.
Hopefully somewhere warmer, but probably not.
Yeah, it's a lot of nothing up there. It doesn't take a lot to get lost in Alaska, I don't think. I think it's pretty easy.
Probably not.
It's a lot different than Ohio.
I mean, you can still get lost in Ohio.
Yeah, if you're dumb.
I'm not from around here, okay? I still get lost. that doesn't mean I'm dumb. That just doesn't mean I know all the roads.
Yeah, but there's a difference between like taking the wrong exit and finding yourself on a mountain range that no one knows about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot different up there, I imagine.
Some descent style bullshit right there I ain't about.
But let's hear about the Bell Witch.
Yeah. So this is like one of the great like American spooky legends. So it happened between 1800 and into 1821 in Robertson County, Tennessee, in Adams County. So John Bell Sr. would build his home that he planned to raise his family in. The family actually moved to Tennessee from North Carolina to be on this land and to also help build up the settlement that was there. So his family was one of like the founding members of Adams in Tennessee. So the Bell family is very prominent even to this day in Adams, Tennessee. So John actually was a farmer back in North Carolina, and his wife Lucy had great reputations of being caring, willing to open their doors as well as their table to those who were in need, and you know, just being really, really great friends. So the younger Bell children would go away to school, while the eldest Bell children would actually help their parents in building up the settlement. So every member of the Bell family at this time was helping in some way to build the town they were going to live in. So fast forward to 1817. John was actually walking through his cornfield on his property by himself when he saw this really big dog just sitting in the field looking back at him. And he noticed that this dog was very odd looking, and it was almost kind of like his bones didn't quite fit all together, like they had healed wrong. And he even stated in later accounts that this dog was so big that John pondered if it was a wolf, which is actually really funny because, and again, pagan, because in pagan lore, spirit animals have a big to do. Like you can appear as your spirit animal. If your spirit animal appears to you, it can also mean that death is coming near, all kinds of different things. But very, very specifically, the spirit animal of a wolf means that the person who owns that spirit animal is very distrusting. Like a lot of people think it's really badass to be a wolf, like spirit animal. No, it means you're kind of a dick. Like,
doesn't that aspect kind of run parallels to like the stuff in like Skinwalker Ranch and stuff?
Yeah.
Where people
turn into like this monster after betraying a family member and all that. Like, it's, guys, American lore is freaking cool. And we're vicious in our lore too. It's kind of funny. Like, we talk about people eating one another and dogs coming after us and just, do you have any vicious lore in Canada, Essie?
Well, other than the moose ghosts, it's just that you just have to beware of, you know, the cobra pigeons, right? Like
the cobra pigeons.
Yeah, well, the Canadian geese, but or military grade pigeons, however you want to call them. That's the only lore. Use your kids as a weapon. You know, anything you can do to protect yourself from the vicious Canadian geese. That's where all of the anger of any Canadian goes, is just into the geese. That's why Canadians are so nice, and those geese can die.
The most terrifying Canadian ghost horror story is, and he opened his cupboard, and we're all out of syrup. And all the kids are like, oh no, God.
You know, you can't do that to me. You know, if you start talking in those lores, man, I might just log off. All right. I'm sweating maple syrup here, bud. Fuck.
It's just coming out of the pores.
In case you guys haven't figured out, Essie's from somewhere other than America.
Yeah.
So
it's strange and scary to us.
Strange and scary to all of us.
Yes.
He's our little immigrant. It's fine.
Yeah, that's his only personality trait.
I mean, we have everything. I mean, we got it all.
Essie, Canadian, edits cult talk conspiracy. That's his.
What else is there to know?
That's it. Spotify musician as well.
That's three.
I got three total. Hey, honestly, that's more than I get recognized for on tour. Like on my job, they're like, "Oh yeah, he's Canadian. Fuck that guy." And I'm like, "I'm sorry. Which shows sold out the best? The Canadian ones? Oh, that's crazy.
Like, thanks. Oh my gosh. So John Bell would actually fire his gun at this big dog that's just staring at him in his cornfield, and the dog would run away quickly. So John would walk up to the spot in the cornfield that the dog was sitting in, and there was actually no indication that a dog was sitting there. Like, the crops weren't folded down, and there weren't any paw prints, which I mean if you're sitting, like, even as a person in a field, like, you're gonna like get some crops down. Like, I've walked through cornfields before. Like, there's no way you could walk and not knock something over.
Right.
So days later, the family would actually begin to hear tapping all over the outside of the house. And it was kind of up in the air on what was going on there, because John Bell thought it was people playing pranks on the family. But that also raises the question of, why would someone play a prank on a family who's literally willing to open their home to just about anyone? Or anyone for that matter. So they kind of kept it under wraps for about a year. And that was when the youngest Bell boys would start to hear what sounded like rodents chewing on their beds in the middle of the night. So, you know, this would go on for about two nights. And what was important to note there is, every time they got up to inspect, not only would the chewing stop, but there would be no marks on their beds indicating that anything had been chewing on them. Because you could easily dismiss, okay, the chewing stopped once they get up. Okay, you scared the rat away, whatever. But for there to be no marks was really confusing. So on the third night, underneath their bed, instead of hearing that chewing noise, it would actually sound like someone gasping for air, almost like when Eric laughs too hard, you know, the...
Yeah, okay.
I thought that would be funny.
I think our audience, they'll get it.
Yeah, they'll understand. Essie, can we... No, don't do that. That would be mean.
Oh, edit it in? We could do it.
Mike's editing this one, so he probably has a whole folder on his on his desktop of Eric
just a 5-minute
gasping
cut.
For life. Yeah.
just way people, too long.
Let me tell you guys, like, people will look at Ben and I when he starts doing that and they're like, is he okay? Are you guys gonna do anything? Just because we're so desensitized to it. It's like, he's fine. Like, he's not even turning purple yet.
Your friend is dying. Are you gonna help?
Right. Give him a drink of water in his inhaler. He'll be just your fine. Friend is having an issue there.
Yeah. You just go, that next time that happens, you just need to look at the person and just go, well, I guess it's his time. And then just like start walking away. Just like make it seem really concerning. Just be like, yeah, we've been waiting.
Yeah. There's an entire room of the house I don't get to use. Okay. There's things to be done.
Yeah. So honestly, this is a good thing.
Say that.
Okay. He stops laughing and is okay. You just go, damn it. All right. Well, next time.
So the boys would get up and they would wake their family, of course, because, you know, there is someone gasping for dear life underneath of their bed. And they went up and they got their family. The whole family searched the house top to bottom. They would find absolutely nothing. So this was to the point where John would then tell his neighbor that he was the very closest with about all of these weird encounters that were happening inside the Bell house. So this neighbor was not only such a good friend, but so trusting in John's word as well, that he actually got up and said, okay, let's go back over. And they went back to the house to go and stay the night in the house. And then he would actually become so frightened by all of the noise that he kept hearing within the night that he would leave in the middle of the night and go back to his own home.
Oh, wow.
So this was when it started to get really serious and when people in the town started to get involved. So people within the town would actually start to volunteer to go stay the night at the Bell house with the family. Some would even watch members of the Bell family sleeping to ensure the Bells weren't the ones causing these strange occurrences within the house.
Wait. Whose idea was that though? Was it like the creepy guy watching them? It's like, I'll watch you sleep. I'm gonna make sure it's not you. I was like, all right, Mr. Creepy Joe. It's like, what? You're totally fine. Like,
I'm gonna watch your daughter sleep. Let me do it. It's no, for your own good.
Make sure a ghost it's don't get her. Good.
We have to know that it's not you guys doing this.
I don't want to be doing this, but here I am.
Oh, good Lord. That's creepy. That's too much. So the noises would still persist no matter who was in the Bell home. So the theories ranged from John Bell's youngest daughter to someone, to young John Bell's youngest daughter. I'm sorry, I had a stroke. Making all of these things happen, the tapping, the voices, all of it. Someone that hated the Bells, who just had it out for them, even a ventriloquist, or even having a squatter family living in the home with them.
When did this happen again? What was the year this happened?
1818 is the year we're in right now. But it happens from like 1800 all the way up into 1821 is the last year that we have.
Where was that?
This is in Adams County, Tennessee.
Okay. Man, they're a little more like Eastern, man. They would have been hanging people, burning the daughter if it's been a little more on the East Coast.
Yeah, just a wee bit, you know.
They would have jumped to conclusions well before anyone started making sensible decisions.
Wow. That's true.
Yeah.
This was at a time when, you know, witch hunts were, that was like the 1600s. So, I mean, that would have been.
Okay, yeah, a couple hundred years.
Years difference, and we would have had a big old bonfire.
Oh, yeah, they'd be like, listen, John, we've got to behead your daughter.
Yeah, like, I know you love your daughter, but she's marked by the devil.
Yeah, man. She definitely is possessed.
Like, this is not okay.
All this will go away after we burn your daughter at the stake.
And if
it doesn't, we'll move on to the wife.
Yeah, that's true. That's pretty much how they went on it. Like, back in the Salem witch trials, it was basically like, whoever you hated, accuse them of as a witch, and then there they go. Bye. A lot of people were actually accused because of land and farm disputes.
Oh, man.
Times were so much more simple back then.
Yeah, no, we lost our way somewhere along there.
Oh, my gosh. Now we have to be like cordial to the people we don't like.
Now you just go on Twitter if you don't like someone. You just make some claims on Twitter.
We can do the same thing as was happening back then. Just go like, well, dude was watching me sleep and he has to get canceled.
He has to get canceled. Oh, my God. I don't know. I just prefer to call people out on their bullshit as it's happening. Just bye.
I like the old fashioned ways. I'm a man of tradition.
What's that?
Yeah, no, that's. I mean, you can still do that, but then also that's just burn them at the stake. Like, why are we limiting ourselves?
Then you can have marshmallows too.
See, there is no downside to burning your enemies at the stake. What, they have families that love them? Get out of here. No, they don't.
No.
It's a spectacle. I mean, imagine like being back then. It's like, all right, you know, hurry up. The stake burning's in 5 minutes. We got to get the talents. We got to get a good seat.
I mean, yeah, what else are you doing back then?
Yeah, I know.
Peter's out. So, you know, just
fucking fighting and praying, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, but yeah, like they would have bands come out and everything and like make it a whole to do, and people would cheer and dance and whatnot. And I mean, it's like, if you've ever seen
metal is shit.
Oh, what's it called? Gangs of New York.
Gangs of
New York has a really good interpretation of what it's like to see people get hung. Well, not to see people get hung, but what it would have been like. I haven't been through that much shit in my life, but I mean, what?
He's like, trust me, I've seen it. It's really accurate.
It's somewhere in my past life memories.
Interpretation of it.
Where were you during lynching?
She is from Georgia.
I am from South Georgia.
Yeah, she's.
Well, I live in Tennessee now, so I can't say shit. I guess.
Yeah, but you're Canadian. You're gonna. Yeah, be that's fine. True.
They're getting to me. Yeah,
he's not gonna be fine. They're going to target him. So yeah. You know, he's not from here. That's all it takes.
Yeah, but Canadians are just too nice. They're just too nice.
I don't think hanging anyone has anything to do with how nice they are to you. I don't think that's why they were hanging people, Bailey. They weren't hanging rude people back then.
But once again,
what is her crime? She didn't say please.
Yeah, I don't think that was the reasoning behind a lot of these crimes. I think it was a matter of that.
It was a lot.
Yeah, there was a lot of different reasons. But we're about the Bell Witch.
But the bells. Well, John Bell did not think it was his daughter, so she would not be getting hung anytime soon. So, but John Bell would, however, his health and his behavior would start to deteriorate in what would be the later years of his life, which were actually not that bad. So he would he would twitch, he would blink out of sync, he would forget or not even acknowledge that he was in conversations with others, and it was just like he would just lose focus, like as he kept talking to these people. And then over time, within the Bell family household, things would be moved on their own within the house that could not have been moved by someone within the room. Each member of the Bell family would be touched by an apparition or some unknown force. They would hear voices, items would go missing, just all kinds of different occurrences that would happen. But the one that is most notable would actually happen to the Bell women. So one of the youngest daughters would be Betsy Bell, John's youngest daughter, who, you know, everyone thinks is perpetrating all of these things, would be walking along the property, and she would see this woman on her property. Now, at this time, it still was not uncommon for neighbors or other townspeople to come onto the Bell property and check up on them, as well as the paranormal activity. So when Betsy Bell called out to her, she did not answer back. But instead began scratching and clawing at her hair so much that chunks would actually fall out of her head. And Betsy Bell just hauled ass all the way back home where her mother and her older sister were. And each woman independently both saw the woman. So three children would actually appear with the woman, and reportedly they would climb into the trees. And also reportedly they began swaying in these trees. And as they began to sway, the trees swayed with them. And this terrified the women and all the members of the Bell family as well. So in much later years, John Bell would actually die after becoming very ill of what is legend to be poisoning by the Bell witch, Kate. Now, who was Kate? Who is this spirit that we're all talking about? Kate Bat was actually a neighbor of the Bells who felt cheated in the sale of some kind, whether it was in property because they were building the settlement at that time, or whether it was in, you know, a horse or whatever. But we really get Kate Bat's from Ingram's book, And Ingram, he actually has the most accurate reporting of the Bell Witch tale because he received that book as a diary from Richard Bell, who was John Bell's son. Okay. Richard Bell would go and give the diary to his son, and then the son would give it to Ingram. And then Ingram would then publish it, and it would become legend.
So he was the one that got the story out there.
Yeah. Okay. Because, I mean, it was just local legend all the way up until the book was written. And then the book was written, it was published worldwide, or, you know, locally, and then more and more people from all over started to hear about it. Now, Adams County in Tennessee, Robertson County, town of Adams, excuse me, is now like a big tourist attraction because of the Bell Witch. Like, they have a Bell Witch play. They have kinds of Bell Witch, like, memorabilia. Like, you can still go up on the Bell family farm. It's all kinds of, like, they have really, like, sank into it and are like, nope.
There's a little trip you can take, Essie.
Yeah,
I'll need to look into that because I have some time coming off soon. So maybe I'll go get haunted or something. I don't know.
There you go.
Go take a little road trip.
Sounds fun.
I mean, hey, weirder things have happened.
I got nothing better going on right now. So catch a curse. See what happens.
I mean,
not how you want to spend your Tuesday.
I could put a curse on you if you'd like. I have all of the things. I have jars, and tell me what kind you want.
Can I have a friendly curse?
Friendly curse. I don't think there's such things as friendly.
Yeah, I don't think pagans do anything nice.
We do things that are nice. It's just if you're going to be a bitch, you're going to catch these hands.
Can you put a spell on me that'll make me find a girlfriend? That would be awesome. I'd really
probably not that. The kind of girlfriend you'd like.
You don't understand how low my standards are right now.
You're like, as long as she's breathing, it's fine.
Oh, I don't even need that.
No, no, no. We do have a Necronomicon somewhere. We could let you read that for a little bit.
You know what?
Not very good things have came from the Necronomicon, the stuff I've seen.
I mean, we could have the real Ash sitting in our presence right now, Ty.
Could be.
Could that was be. Very unenthused.
He was like,
right. Canadian Ash. I don't buy it.
So the biggest conundrum with Kate being the Bell Witch is that she wasn't actually dead during the time of these hauntings. She wasn't dead is the biggest thing. But according to family reports, as well as doctor and police reports, sheriff's reports back at the time, when the family was questioned about who poisoned John, all of the family said no, but there was a inhuman voice or like detached voice that said, I did. And when they asked who, they said the witch. And she would always refer to herself as Kate as well. And the voice was said to have resembled that of Kate Batts. Now, Kate Batts nor the Batts family were ever interviewed about Kate being the witch, which is very strange because the Bell family is still very much involved with the story. We mentioned a play that goes on every year during Halloween in Adams, and there are both members of the Bell and the Batts family that will attend and sometimes even be in the cast of that play. It's very strange to me that the Batts family has not done an interview or anything like that because their grandma's being accused of being a witch. I mean, I'd say something. I mean, come on now. So John Bell would die of this supposed poisoning, and he would be buried on the Bell farmland, somewhere out on the land. There was actually a local man who, within the past two decades, tried to find all of the people who built up Adams, all of their original graves, because they weren't buried in graveyards. They were typically buried on their family plots or their family land. So he tried to find a very close friend of John Bell's, and he said when he found it, it just didn't feel right. So he covered it back up and never pursued finding anyone else's grave after that. Huh. It just didn't feel right. So the Bell family, of course, still lives on. Strangely enough, though, we'll talk about Richard Bell again real quick. Richard Bell actually served with Andrew Jackson in New Orleans, and he would actually bring Andrew Jackson to the Bell family farm and would have Andrew Jackson stay the night there, like the president. And Andrew Jackson said he would rather face the British Army than the Bell Witch. So
weak ass Brits.
So Bob Bell, the most recent descendant, not only said he still lives on the property, but things do still happen within the home, such as footsteps, voices being heard, as well as things moving on their own. And this is just a daily occurrence within his family life, as well as within the town of Adams. Things will fly off the walls within local shops. People have seen apparitions and strange animals all over the county, things they cannot explain. Most people will actually dismiss the account and say, go away, Kate, we don't have time for you. And then the things will stop. So is Adams in Richard County? Let me make sure I'm saying that right, because I say Richard and then I'm like, is it Richmond? In the back of my mind, because, you know, anxiety. Robertson County. Is Adams in Robertson County haunted by a Bell witch, a poltergeist, a ghost? I don't know, but I really want to go.
That'd be fun. Yeah, be fun.
Tennessee road trip, baby.
Yeah.
So that's what I got on the Bell witch.
Interesting. I've heard about this some. I think even Small Town Monsters has a documentary out about, about the Bell witch.
Yes, I believe so as well. And of course, like the Bell witch, they've done like all kinds of different like movies and found footages and all kinds of different documentaries and whatnot. And it's just something that I think is really ingrained in American lore. And it's one of those like true ghost stories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we can move on. Let Essie tell his little tale he's got. I know he's been working on it. It's Essie's first time here proper on Cult Talk Conspiracy. So I'm interested to see what he brings.
All right. Well, I actually, I am going to be doing mine on the Battle of Marathon. So we're taking it way, way back. But before I do that, I actually just want to tell you guys of an encounter with quotes that happened about a week and a half ago in my own home.
Oh, okay.
We're just gonna do that really quick.
In Tennessee. So
I was hanging out with my roommate. We were working on mixing some of my music, as you guys said, the renowned Spotify artist. Yep. And all of a sudden we were just like working on it, listening back to it. And he just really quickly paused it and turned around as quickly as he could. And I was just like staring at him like, you all right there, man? And he was like, I could have sworn I just heard a woman say hello at the top of our staircase. And I was just like, all right, man, not sure what you heard, but I did not hear that. So whatever. And he was just like, weird and crazy. I guess we'll just keep working. And I was just kind of like in the back of my head, just like here. All right, man, whatever. And then about like a few days later, I was just sitting on my couch downstairs playing on my Switch, which did not have any volume on. So like I didn't have any sound going. And I heard a woman at the top of my stairs say hello twice. And I was just like, well, now I believe him and I'm going to shit myself. So this is really cool. Because like we were upstairs in his room and he turned around and he was like, it was at the top of my stairs. And then I was downstairs and heard it also from up at the top of my stairs. And so I guess my house is haunted. Sometimes when I turn on light switches, only one bulb comes on, but it changes which bulb it is every time. So I don't know if that's just weird, terrible wiring or if it's a ghost. And I'm saying it's a ghost because I'm not smart enough to know about wiring. So
that's fucking weird.
Yeah, but it was more the hellos that really got us, because I was just like, all right, you're really strange for thinking that. And then I heard it like a couple days later, clear as day. And
did
I was
you leave like, the house?
Of course. No. Well, I did, but that was because I actually had somewhere to go. But that was also in the back of my head.
I'll be a little early.
Yeah, I'm like, this is fine. And then I was like, well, I'm about to be gone for 4 days, so not my problem. And then he didn't mention anything else. But anyway, after that, let's talk about the Battle of Marathon. We're going to do a little history lesson on Greece back in that time. So this all started in 490 BC. Like I said, we're going back a little ways.
Yeah, old one.
The Persians were at war with the Plataeans and the Athenians. During this Battle of Marathon, there was 25,000 Persians and a total of around 10,000 Plataeans and Athenians. So they were very outnumbered during this battle.
Sounds like it.
Before the battle, the Athenians knew they were outnumbered and they sent, oh my gosh, how do I pronounce this Greek name? I looked it up just so I'd be prepared for this. And of course, I've forgotten. Let me just go to Philippides?
I think you're right. Philippides. I think it's Philippides. I'm pretty
Philippides?
Sure it's, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the pronunciation.
Yeah, let's go with that. And he was one of the best of the Athenians runners. And they sent him to Sparta to ask for help, which was... Oh, a shocking number. It was 140 miles away through the mountains. Could you imagine just being like, hey, can you just take a quick little run 140 miles really quick?
No,
just
to thank get some you, help? Sir.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, no, what else are you doing?
I mean, getting ready for battle, apparently. Oh, man. But yeah, Philippides ran this 140 miles in under 3 days to ask for help from Sparta. And the Spartans actually agreed to help, but they said they needed to wait for the full moon or the new moon because of religious law, which Spartans were very, very involved with. So then Philippides had to run all the way back just to be like, hey, the Spartans will help, but not in time for us to already go to this battle. So dude just ran 280 miles for nothing, which is crazy.
Yeah, sure.
Why not? And then as soon as he got back, he picked up his shields and armor and weapons and started marching with them.
Oh, God.
So you're exhausted at that point. So now we get to the battle. And according to legend, as the invasion began, the shepherd god Pan intervened with black clouds that obscured the sun. So imagine you're the Persians, right? And you're seeing this army that's admittedly about half the size of yours marching towards you, but they have Mother Nature on their side. The clouds start like rolling over them and basically like act as waves coming at the Persians, which actually caused the Persians panic and retreat, which means this was actually the first battle won for democracy in Greece, which is pretty crazy. And then the second battle was in, this is just a side note, this has nothing to do with it, but it was in 480 BC when Salamis defeated the Persians again. And that is considered to be one of the most significant battles in history. So that's just a fun little side note, just to be after this victory, Philippides was told once again to run back to Athens, and but this time to tell them the good news. So the where Marathon took place in this little town where the Battle of Marathon was 26.2 miles from Athens, which is where we get the distance for the modern day marathon. And also why a marathon is called a marathon is because it was he left the Battle of Marathon.
You know, kind so of he ran
this
tidbits.
26. Yeah. So he ran this 26.2 miles back to Athens yelling Nike, which is Greek for victory. And when the word got out and more people heard him, he collapsed there and died of exhaustion. Dude ran almost 300 miles in like a week and then battled and marched. So pretty crazy. Man. And that is why. So, yeah, that is why we have significance in Marathon is out of respect for Philippides. And to this day, the marathon in Athens starts at the battle site and ends where he collapsed.
Wow.
Which is also crazy to me that Greece is such an old country and Athens is such an old city that the route is still the same to this day.
Wow.
From 490 BC.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they're a lot more respectful of their land over there than we are.
Yeah, they don't just tear things down and rebuild.
Yeah. If that would have been here, that would already that stretch would have been peppered with used car lots and strip malls for as far as the eye could see.
Stop. Oh, yeah. Breaks my heart.
Isn't that sad? Well, which is why when you go to Athens, you can look out and just see how much the city's expanded because they're not really building up on top of things that were already there. They just keep going out. So it's pretty crazy.
That's cool.
Yeah.
There is in Athens, there is still a blue line that marks the path that he ran all those years.
Wow.
So now more on to the encounters. Where the battlefield was, hundreds of soldiers were actually buried in a mass grave where there is now a high mound covered in grass. So they basically just put all the bodies in one place, covered it with some dirt, and let nature take over.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, you know, at that point, when you got that many bodies, you're just like, oh, God, what are we going to do? Just grab your shovel, I guess, and just pile them up. But it gets kind of concerning because they knew they were so outnumbered that they had to recruit people of all ages. And the youngest soldier that died that day was 10 years old.
Aww.
So there is, it's pretty wild that there is children even fighting in that war. But I guess that's still like a 30-year life back then anyway. So I don't know if it's still as dramatic as it would be now. But
the 10-year-olds probably would have wanted to go to war too. It was a completely different culture back then.
They would have wanted to die. I feel like they would have wanted it.
No, they would have wanted to go and be a warrior, like go and fight in battle. They didn't.
They went the way they wanted.
I mean, I don't know.
I mean,
different cultures.
When we were little boys, we played war, and then we grew up mm-hmm. and realized what that meant and went, oh no, terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, so yeah.
I get it.
They haven't had the life experience, so they were just like, yeah, I'll go.
This yeah, I'm sure they're getting hyped up by some recruiters, like back in high school. The recruiters that show up and's like, you'll be driving a Mercedes and getting chicks all the time if you join the army.
And it couldn't be more true. Yeah.
As they're trying to hide their mangled arm, it's all good, man.
It's great. I get free IHOP on Veterans Day. This rocks.
Oh, this? No, I love having this. I don't miss my arm one bit.
Have you seen Starship
Troopers? I'm better for it.
Starship Troopers when he's checking them in and he's like, the infantry, it made me the man I am today. And meanwhile, yeah, he's like
the leg and the arm. Yeah.
He's like, he's so proud to serve as well because like he did something. He helped become free.
I honestly wish.
I'm fine doing nothing.
Yeah, I wish personally. I had that love for a country. I
same.
Simply don't care.
Same with me. I see people go off and fight in the military all the time. I'm like, man, I'm glad you care as much.
Yeah.
I'm glad one of us does. Because
it ain't me.
It ain't me. I'm too busy watching movies to really consider doing anything like that.
I'd like to think I'd be all macho and be like, yeah, I'm going to join, but I'd be terrified, man. No, I'd be like, oh my God.
My favorite are the people who don't understand the military. They're like, I don't want to do any of that training. Just drop me in the Middle East and I'll take care of it. The fucking rednecks. It's like, yeah, that's what it is. The military is one big Rambo movie. It's the Expendables.
I'm pretty sure it's just like summer camp. Like you go out, some archery, you go camping.
Yeah.
I just watched Full Metal Jacket for the first time the other day.
Yeah.
Oh, that was crazy. Movie. That was an experience.
Yeah. Not enough montages in that movie. They should have more wacky montages in there.
I just also watched that the other night, and I don't know who thought it was a good idea to put that on the bus before a showtime. Like, we're all just sitting there watching Full Metal Jacket going, oh man, we have to go do a show, and we're all just like depressed. And they're
that seems like a downer.
Yeah, that was normally we watch the campaign. Like, that's what I want. I want to laugh.
Yeah, it's fun. Okay. Let's hear about these encounters.
Yes. So, to this day, actually, people still say they hear horses neighing and men fighting on the battlegrounds of Marathon. But supposedly, if you go there knowing that you can hear ghosts and see ghosts, you will never find them. Only people that claim that they didn't know that that was a thing are the ones that experience it.
Well, so thanks, Essie.
Now that I've said this,
I'm never going to experience anything.
I know. I'm so sorry. But yeah, that's like a common experience at the Battle of Marathon is people that are just going to learn about the history have encounters, and people that go knowing about the encounters have nothing. So that's kind of interesting.
That's cool.
It's like the original site of ghosts where they're like, we'll make you believe this is it.
Man, we should have sent Ty there. We just shouldn't have said anything. We should have been like, Ty, you're going to go to this one spot.
We're flying to Greece, baby. No, and he's like, yeah, all right, cool.
He's like, fine. Is this a business trip?
Cool, I get to write this off. This rocks. that's not even the actual encounter that I wanted to talk about, because it gets weirder than just going there and seeing ghosts. There are multiple tellings of spirits actually fighting against the Persians during the war and even saving the lives of some of the soldiers.
Oh my.
So they engage, soldiers,
they fully engaged in battle. So maybe that goes back to Pan rolling out the clouds and like having all those dark clouds and then spirits and ghosts descended from the clouds.
I can see why
you might, even though you have double the amount of soldiers, might want to retreat on that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the Athenian soldiers returned home and told of ghosts swooping in at the last second and killing their attackers before they were injured. There was even one soldier who saw a gigantic spirit with a long flowing beard that descended from the sky right in front of him, and he immediately went blind.
He suffered no
physical injury, but he lost sight.
It's the last thing he saw.
That was the last thing he saw. And they believe it was a god descending from the heavens because Greeks were never supposed to lay their eyes on the gods, but he did, so he was blinded. And they took him to like doctor, or I guess whatever the equivalent of doctors was. They tried to get him patched up and they were like, well, there's nothing wrong with him. He didn't take an arrow to the eye or anything. He just saw this descend.
Like, we can't fix this.
Went blind. So that was a bit, those are the encounters that I wanted to talk about, is just that during during the Battle of Marathon, spirits and ghosts were attacking the Persians and actually injuring them and killing them during that battle. Which
I have never heard of that. That is weird. Yeah, that is metal.
Ooh, isn't that badass? That's crazy. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm super excited about this. This is crazy. First of all, I have a joke. I guess, you know, if Jesus has to give sight to one man, he has to take it from another. So I guess he might have been preparing. You know, Jesus gives, Jesus takes.
You know, eye for an eye, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, this was 500 years before Jesus, but you know.
Listen, he was preparing. It's fine.
Yeah, there we go.
He was getting ready. He was making sure he had the trick ready.
Yeah, early test run.
Yeah.
For exactly. I picked this one because I was trying to go back into, I was trying to find anything where like high ranking officials saw a ghost and it actually like changed the course of history.
Oh,
I wanted to
cool.
find someone to be like, I was going to make this decision. And then I saw like something, some spirit came to me and I changed my decision. And then how we could backtrack that. And I didn't realize just how far back I could find something because we have democracy because of these spirits that fought the Persians.
I love that. That is absolutely amazing.
Pretty
there
crazy.
Was actually a battle in World War II. And I can't remember who it was fighting the Germans, but it was pretty much like the same setup, but people who survived that battle said that they saw like angels coming down like on horseback fighting with them, and they actually saw like dogs coming from the other side and like fires and whatnot. So it was basically like it was almost like heaven and hell fighting at the same time. I'll have to look more into that battle, but that reminded me a lot of that story and just how like crazy that can be. Because I mean, in pagan lore, like our gods were warriors. They are all about the battle and all about, you know, the sacrifice of being a warrior. So, I mean, that just, it gets me excited. Yeah. That's my spiel.
That's great. Yeah. In Canadian lore, it's just our gods were beavers and hockey players. So,
yep.
Not as exciting, but, you know, it's pretty cool.
That made maple syrup in their spare time.
Yeah. Oh. Gretzky is God, right?
Yeah, Gretzky. Well, he is now.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So I'm going to talk about something. My encounter. So this was really, I had to dig for this. I was kind of unsure what to do because I've been very vocal. I have very little interest in ghosts. Paranormal things do not tickle my spine at all. Yeah, don't tickle my pickle. Sure.
Ghosts don't give him a crotch rock. I'll tell you that right now.
Not at all. I don't get bricked up for ghosts. I've never gotten bricked up for a ghost.
I thought that'd be hilarious. Like instead of a ghost, like hunters show, just like one of the dudes is like really enthusiastic about finding it.
Yeah.
And ghost it's, like, you realize that his entire thing is he just wants to fuck ghosts.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's the entire reason he's on this ghost hunting show.
Yeah, he's ghost busting.
He is busting some ghost cheeks for sure, dude.
Outside of like this not being like Ghostbusters is one of my all-time favorite movies. I go as Ray Stans every year.
Right,
my favorite Ghostbuster.
Ghostbusters.
Very fantastic. But no, I never really got into ghosts. I just never really found them interesting. I'd hear ghost stories, just you know, whatever. People see ghosts. That's their prerogative. I've never seen one or experienced one, but I just never got into them. Just never interested me. I don't like ghost movies. Not really a big ghost story guy.
Have you tried acid? You might see some.
I've tried acid. I've never seen ghosts on it though.
Did you try it?
When I've done acid, it's usually just like I see like a food move. That's my thing. Like food will move around on one.
Yeah, that's good.
But I don't believe it's a ghost.
Is your food from something that was living?
Maybe. It could be the ghosts of cows or chickens, whatever it may be. So I was thinking, you know, what can I do as a ghost thing? I want to find something that interested me. I didn't want to do something that was boring. But I got to thinking, I was like, you know, all said and done, I've been to like a pretty big paranormal hotspot. I've actually been to somewhere. Last year, Eric and Mike and I got to go out to Colorado to the historic Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado, is a huge landmark for anyone who has interest in ghosts or paranormal because it has a fantastic history. The Stanley Hotel is located in Estes Park. It was built in 1909. It was basically envisioned to be like the elite stay at the time. 420 rooms built by F.O. Stanley, and he was the co-founder of Stanley Motor Carriage Company. So this guy had money, and he wanted this to be just the most impressive hotel of its time, which it was for its time. It was a marvel. He died in 1940, but it's no, like, the interesting thing about the Stanley Hotel is it has this very large history of paranormal activity, but there isn't any malicious or malevolent event that occurred there. There's no the Stanley Hotel murders or, you know, the Stanley Hotel massacre. There's nothing like that. You know, F.O. Stanley, he didn't die in the hotel. He just died of natural causes. Same with his wife. Like, there's no, like, real malevolent event that took place on the grounds of the Stanley. But since the 1940s on, there has been a lot of people that have reported things, like common things are shadowy figures moving in and out of rooms. People exit the room and there they'll see a shadow move across the across the hallway. Ghost laughter, phantom laughter, they call it. You'll hear like very eerie laughter in the halls, but no one's there. Flickering lights is another thing. You know, lights will flicker. Maybe bad wiring. It's a building built in 1909. Maybe. I mean, I don't know.
Library.
It's an over 100-year-old facility.
Isn't it on like a cliff or a mountain?
It's built in front of a mountain, but it's on a hill. It's a beautiful place. I'm sure I'll post a picture of me, Eric, and Mike standing in front of it for promotion on this episode. But yeah, it's a beautiful place. We actually had we didn't stay at the hotel. We were there for Bruce Fest, the Bruce Campbell Festival. But we had a friend who was like staying in the hotel, and she took us up to her room, and you know, we walked the halls and stuff, and it's a beautiful place, just absolutely beautiful, phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. All the pictures,
it's definitely. You could tell it was built in a different time because the rooms are like closets. I mean, they are tiny in this thing. Very expensive though. So,
it's the Stanley.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Some of the things that most notable things is people claim that Flora Stanley, she was the partner of F.O. Stanley. They would hear, she was a pianist, so sometimes they'll hear the piano keys, you know, playing. No one's there. They think it's Flora Stanley. Now, when we were there, another thing that we did, aside from actually getting to walk the grounds, things like that, is when we went to the gift shop, which the gift shop, they fully embrace the paranormal side of it. They have fully embraced it as like, this is like what we're known for. You know, we're going to embrace it.
Capitalism.
I mean, I say it all the time. If you're a small town, you have a minor legend, embrace it and make it bigger than it is. There are people out there that love that kind of stuff and just capitalize on it. Because if you don't, someone else will.
Yes. Someone not from your town, probably. So you might as well just do it.
Because even like, you know, Point Pleasant, they fully embrace the Mothman, and they have, you know, one of the most widely attended festivals in America that happen there once a year. I mean, it makes bank for that city, that little town.
Absolutely.
Can't call it a city. I mean, it's a town.
And then you and some of the Cult Talk Net Courage went this past September.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, the pictures you guys sent us, like, it was absolutely slim.
Oh, it is balls to walls when you go to the Mothman.
Thinking about the economic boom that it probably brings that area. Like,
exactly. And the Stanley Hotel, they have fully embraced their history. Everything they do is kind of around it. There's even a channel in the Stanley Hotel on all the TVs. There's a channel that plays a movie 24/7. We'll talk about here later. It's a key part of my encounter. They're fully embraced. But when we was in the hotel, we went to the gift shop and we were shopping around and stuff. And we got to talking to the woman working on the desk. And she is actually telling us, like, you know, I just started back here. I worked here for like 7 years and then I quit because I can't work here. It's too much for me. There's too much stuff that happens. She's like, I can't deal with it. I quit, but there's no other jobs in the town, so I had to come back. She's like, I hate being here myself. Oh my goodness. She was very much like, she was telling us there's some crazy stuff that happens, you know, when they're cleaning rooms, stuff like that. She's like, you'll hear things, you'll see stuff. So from her side, she was fully aware that there was something going on there. She believed anyways, she was not. She quit and had to come back reluctantly, so she was so afraid of whatever this was or whatever's going on there. But, you know, there's been a lot of encounters, you know, nothing like huge. They've had a lot of TV shows come through, Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, all those big shows come through. They even offer a Ghost Adventure package where you can, if you're staying there overnight, you can actually do like a after hours tour of the place.
Let's do it.
With a little EM F reader, electromagnetic field reader. Yeah.
I want to go.
Ghost Graft. And you, all this stuff you can do, because they fully bleed into it, which, you know, kudos to them, because that's the way to do it. But one of the most famous encounters there actually took place in 1974, when a young up-and-coming American novelist named Stephen King and his wife were coming through Estes Park. They were traveling through Colorado. It was late at night. They decided, we have to stop. We can't go any further. We got to stay somewhere. And there up on the hill is the historic Stanley Hotel. This is actually the off season. Fall is the off season. Stanley Hotel sees a lot of business come through in the summer and the winter, the fall, not so much. So this was the off season. There was hardly anyone there. Basically, from what I understand is the hotel was basically just them two. It was the staff and then Stephen King and his wife. They were the only two that were in the hotel. So they found the Stanley Hotel at this time, 1974, was in very bad condition. It was not being taken care of. It was Estes Park is a. It's not. People keep calling. Every time I read something, it would say the hotel overlooks the city. Estes Park is not a city. It's a town. I mean, they don't even have like DoorDash there, if you want to put it in like modern terms. Mike and Eric and I ordered DoorDash, and it was like estimated wait time 2 hours, and like 3 hours passed before we finally realized, oh, they just don't actually have DoorDash. there's no one to pick up the orders. You can order through DoorDash, but there's no one in the town that runs DoorDash, which it took us a long time to figure that out. It's like, why even offer the service if you don't have anyone that actually picks up the DoorDash?
Because we had to go get it. Capitalism.
Because then what you do is you take a cab and you get the cab to go pick up your food.
And that just adds more into the local economy.
It's economy boom.
Oh, it's a beautiful town. If I ever go there again, it would be fantastic. It's like, if you ever watched a Hallmark movie, a lot of the Hallmark movies are based in Estes Park. It is a Hallmark Christmas movie town. That is what it is. It is incredible. Never in my life did I think I would see a town like Estes Park. So it was a really good experience. But yeah, super small town. So this hotel set in the middle of this town. There's no real like Estes Park. Aside from being in Colorado, you know, one of the most beautiful places in the world, which I do think Colorado is one of the true gems of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely beautiful out there. There's not people like, oh, we got to go to Estes Park, or at least not this time. There wasn't people like, we got to go to Estes Park. So the hotel, for as immaculate as it was originally designed, it had fallen on hard times. It wasn't being upkept. So nonetheless, where else are you going to stay? Stephen King, his wife, they shack up in the hotel in the now infamous room 217, which is at Estes Park. I mean, at the Stanley Hotel, they let you know that is the room that Stephen King stayed in. They are very proud of that. Yeah, room 217. They are like, that's the Stephen King room. They want you to know that. I think they even have a little placard on the door. There's Stephen King.
Stephen King probably fucked his wife in this room. Pretty cool.
Now that night, you know, Stephen King, him and his wife, they went to the Stanley Hotel bar, had some drinks, had some food, and you know, went to bed. Now that night, Stephen King would have a nightmare. He would have the nightmare that his young son was being chased down the long, empty, labyrinthian corridors of the Stanley Hotel by a predatory, possessed fire hose. The fire hose would grab his son, snarl itself around it, and attempt to swallow his son. Stephen King would wake in a drenched sweat. He'd step out on the balcony, have a cigarette, and this is where he would come up with the bones for what would become one of his most iconic stories of all time, The Shining, which published in 1977, would be made into a movie in 1980. You can, whichever one you like better. I think there's like some tension over which is better, the book or the movie. But this is where the idea of the Overlook Hotel, aka the Stanley Hotel, would come from. And that's what it would be. That's where the inspiration of that whole story came from, is the Stanley Hotel. The Stanley Hotel, they fully embraced it. You can go there and get your Red Rum hat or a Red Rum t-shirt. I think Eric bought a Red Rum hat.
Yeah.
If I recall, from there, they fully embrace it. They have after hours ghost tours. They have fortune telling. They have psychics on staff.
Oh, that's cool.
There's a channel at the Stanley Hotel. Every television has a channel that 24/7 Stanley Kubrick's 1980 The Shining is playing on loop. That's awesome. For 24/7 every day of the year. You can, anytime you can turn on The Shining when you're in the Stanley Hotel. They're proud of this. I think they even have like a Stanley. I think the Stanley has its own like special edition of The Shining that you can buy there. Like only you only get in the gift shop at the Stanley Hotel.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, they love it. They have a maze. It's not anywhere near as impressive as the one in the movie. I mean, it's like, you know, waist height, so you can see as you're walking.
See where
through
you're going.
It's, yeah, yeah. It's not anywhere as near as impressive as the one from the Stanley Kubrick movie. Yeah, I don't know. There must be like some regulations or something to that. But yeah, they don't have a nearly as impressive maze.
If you're gonna do it right.
Unique.
Yeah. You know,
one person a year should die in that.
Oh, absolutely. They should definitely sacrifice someone from the park. Come on. Rest's part.
Yeah.
To better the economy of the town.
Exactly.
Sacrifice to Stephen King.
No, I chose this, you know, because I mean, Stephen King, it's not anywhere near like an impressive encounter or a horrific encounter, but I think the implications of the encounter far outweigh the actual encounter. That it just has a huge impact on American pop culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It resurrected this hotel, which at the time was about to be put out of business.
Oh, yeah.
Hotel. I mean, it was near being shuttered before The Shining came out, and, you know, Stephen King started talking about where his inspiration came and all this tourism, people were like going there. But then all the stories started happening. The more people that would stay at the hotel, the more people that would report these very odd instances of, you know, hearing things, seeing things, feeling things. People, you know, say that you can feel something touch you in certain parts of the night. You know, you can feel like there's presences in your room. It is a very beautiful hotel, and it is labyrinthian. Mm-hmm. Like Mike and Eric and I, you know, we were all over it. We were there for 3 days. So we were in every building for hours at a time. And it was so easy to get lost in it because it was just so vast. Everything's so small and tight. The corridors, everything's like a sharp angle, and it's insane. But it was the inspiration for The Shining. I think that's pretty impactful for something like a ghost encounter or encountering something menacing, like a spirit has that big of an impact on culture.
Can we talk about the carpet for a second in the Stanley Hotel?
Okay.
The fucking carpet in the Stanley Hotel. Can we talk about it?
Talk away.
It is the most, and I know this is why they keep it, because it is the most off-putting carpet I have ever seen in my entire fucking life.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You want to talk, like, that's not even an ugly carpet. That is just a disturbed carpet.
Now, are you talking about the carpet from the hotel or the carpet from the movie? The
carpet from the movie.
Okay. That's the Overlook Hotel in the movie.
Oh, so they
Stanley Hotel is the real thing. The Overlook Hotel is, yeah, like the movie,
but
wasn't
then they
filmed
the,
no.
They didn't.
No, it wasn't filmed there, no. I think that there may be a made-for-TV movie that may have been filmed at the Stanley, but I could be wrong. There is a made-for-TV movie that came out in the 90s called The Shining. That Stephen King actually thinks is like the better.
Oh,
film. Did you know that Stephen King hates the Kubrick movie?
I did not know that.
Oh, he hates that movie. Yeah, he says it's.
Did he say why?
It doesn't follow a lot of the beats of the book.
Oh,
he thinks it's garbage. Stephen King doesn't like most movies based on his works.
Well, that's because his fucking works are weird. And like, why would you turn it into a movie? Like, how are you supposed to in it explain the cosmic turtle god and the child orgy? God. You know,
God, I tried reading it. In high school, and I tried reading it recently through Audible. The Audible is like something like 76 hours. It's some crazy thing, like 40 hours, I think, for the Audible.
Yeah.
But listening to that and trying to read it as a teenager, it's like, I don't have much experience with Stephen King stuff. I haven't tried reading a bunch of his stuff. I know Stephen King from the movies based on his works.
Yeah.
But when I try reading his books, it's like every character, no matter how small or how insignificant to the story, has this huge built background that makes no sense whatsoever. So you read it and it's like, should I hang on to this information? It's like, no, you'll never see that character again.
You'll never see
him.
But in the meantime, let me tell you about how their childhood was and how this, you know, why are they working at a gas station? How did their childhood, you know, it's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like The Stand. I read that book, and that's my favorite Stephen King book. I think they made it into like a miniseries or something, but I never.
Yeah. The miniseries, the original miniseries is really good. The remake is awful.
All you had to say was it's a remake, and like that just told me, you're right.
I had high hopes for it. They had a really good cast, and I was like, man, this might be really cool. So, like, that's one of his properties I could think would be good if someone put more budget into it, because it's an apocalyptic movie, but no, it was bad. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen Maximum Overdrive?
No.
So it's the only Stephen King adaptation directed by Stephen King.
Okay.
It's awful. Emilio Estevez. It's about killer trucks, killer semi trucks.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
and he was coked out of his mind. He talks all the time. He doesn't remember anything from that movie. Oh,
hell yeah.
He was coked out of his mind.
Wasn't he on cocaine when he wrote it?
He was on cocaine a majority of it. Yeah, he was on a majority of this. I mean, he claims he doesn't do cocaine anymore, but I'm like, this guy, he does cocaine. No one stops doing cocaine.
So I guess he blames it on being on cocaine and NyQuil at the same time.
Man,
it's a good combo right there.
I know.
That is a strange combo.
But think about that. If you try that, you could write something along the lines of Pennywise. Of it.
I don't know if I want to put myself through that.
I've got to run to the CVS and
I'll be back with a masterpiece.
I got to call a guy about some other stuff.
I'm going to do a shot of adrenaline and a melatonin all at once to see what happens.
Yeah, see what happens.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Yeah. But that'd be crazy. So the idea of, I'm surprised the idea of like possessed garden hose never made it into the, or fire hose never made it into like his works. Like, and like the book of it.
Well, that's too normal for him.
Oh, it is. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
But a 6-year-old getting his arm completely detached from a socket is totally fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Fuck around with clowns.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, clowns are not trustworthy. See my point in case.
Clowning around. Yeah.
No. And nothing good comes from clowning around. Absolutely not.
But
no,
I live that way. I've always liked to find these, like, it's fine, like, read like ghost encounters from like random people, but it's always interesting to hear like SEI, you set out to find like high ranking government officials that had encounters. I like that. I was like, yeah, I'd like to find something a little more meat on the bone than just some random person encountering ghosts. And it worked out too. So I was like, you know, I've been there. So I at least have an idea of how that place is. And it is like, if you want to have a ghost encounter, I imagine it'd be somewhere like the Stanley.
Right. Oh, yeah. We actually recently stayed in the third most haunted hotel in the world. The first or the number one most haunted hotel in America, the Emily Morgan Hotel, which is right next to the Alamo in Texas.
Oh, wow.
Also, we need to bring back gargoyles because that is an amazing part of architecture. Like, what are we doing now?
Gargoyles are for?
No.
I think they're from German lore, I think. Don't quote me on that one. But basically, they were put on top of buildings to ward off demons.
Yeah, they're supposed to like ward off evil spirits from like the building.
Hell yeah. That rocks. Yeah, because this hotel was built in the early 1900s and was a medical facility actually when it started. It has 13 floors, so it's just like all the bad luck. And the drummer that I'm touring with, he claimed to have felt and seen some weird things while he was in his room that night. And then some of the guys even refused to stay in a room and they just slept on the bus instead. I'm like, guys, we have hotel rooms finally. And they're like, nah, fuck that. I'm staying in my mom's. I'm like, damn, all right. And me, I was I get a bed that's not on a bus. Give it to me. And,
my gosh. Did you experience anything?
I did not. But I was also, man, this was right after we just did a rodeo gig. So it was exhausting. And dealt with dirt all day. And I just showered and fell asleep immediately. So the ghosts were probably like trying to like physically shake me awake and like throwing me against the walls. And I was just like asleep. I didn't care. I was too tired. Like, no,
not to me. Oh, that's cool.
We've been ending these episodes by asking, you know, what's your favorite ghost movie? Do you have a favorite ghost movie or paranormal movie, I guess?
My favorite paranormal movie. The Ghostbusters is the classic, right?
Like absolutely.
The all women's cast of Ghostbusters is just
fuck you, Essie.
Fantastic.
Fuck you. Fuck you.
No.
The movie does not exist. It's not part of the collection DVD of Blu-ray, so it does not exist.
That's fair enough.
They retconned that thing's ass. No,
as they should have. The newer Ghostbusters was a lot better, but still, Afterlife? Those classics. Yeah.
Afterlife's good.
Yeah, those classics were great. I mean, considering nothing else is really sticking out in my mind, then I'd have to go with Ghostbusters.
Yeah, Ghostbusters is going to be my pick as well. That's one of my all-time favorite movies.
Was Last Night in Soho, was that Ghosts? Or did it end up like not? Like, I thought there was like ghost elements in that that Edgar Wright movie. I love Edgar Wright.
I've never seen that. Oh, I love Edgar Wright. I've just never seen that one. I like his Cornetto trilogy.
I just rewatched it last week.
I need to rewatch Hot Fuzz. I rewatched Shaun of the Dead. Mm-hmm. And then a few months ago when I was traveling for work, I rewatched at World's End because I didn't remember much of that movie. Definitely the weaker of the three, but still pretty good movie.
So that's kind of what I thought when, because I didn't even like fully finish it the first time I watched it. And then I just rewatched it.
I don't think I did either.
Recently. And I was like, that was a lot better than I remembered it being.
Yeah.
Hot Fuzz is still number one for sure. Yeah.
Shaun of the Dead's my number one. I know me and Ben always talk about that. Like, it's Shaun of the Dead's mine. His is Hot Fuzz, but I like Shaun of the Dead. Like, I have a thing for zombies.
Yeah.
But what about you, Bailey? What's your favorite ghost movie? You've seen a lot more than I know I have.
I actually really like 13 Ghosts, where they go into the glass mansion.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a really neat movie.
With all the different tortured spirits because he's trying to open up this portal and whatnot. That one's really cool because it's got all kinds of little intricate details. And the architecture on that house is fucking insane, too. Absolutely. Like, I mean, Frank Lloyd Wright, wish he coulda. But no, that one's super, super cool. And it's got Shaggy in it, too.
Yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought of another one.
Mine was Ghostbusters.
Adam Sandler's Hotel Transylvania. Oh, boy. Is that the best?
That's a good one.
I've never seen any of those. They're actually a lot better
than what I thought they were.
Yeah.
Like, they're awesome.
No, they're not. Kicking around watching the animated Addams Family movies.
Okay.
The two that are out. I've been kicking around that. Me and Evan were talking about that the other day, like how we've never actually seen those. I'm like, I wonder if they're any good. Because I'm mixed on Illumination stuff. I don't like the Despicable Me stuff, just not my humor. But I really liked Super Mario Brothers. So maybe Addams Family might be good. So maybe. I might check that out.
Here we go.
But
you'll have to let me know how that goes.
Yeah, I think I can't find the first one. Number two is on Prime, but I can't find the for free anyways. I mean, I can buy the first one, but better they're not. But no, I mean that's good. I mean, so Ghostbusters, 13 Ghosts, those are two pretty solid picks.
Those really are classics. For
classics.
Well, Ghostbusters definitely classic.
I would say if I wanted to pick something other than Ghostbusters, I would say Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Oh. That's probably.
Ooh, I might have to change my answer.
That's probably a next one for me.
Yeah,
Beetlejuice. Yeah,
that'd be one. Yeah, there it is. Yeah,
Beetlejuice rocks. That
might be a good one.
Yeah,
Beetlejuice is fantastic. So I'd say Beetlejuice if I want to pick something other than Ghostbusters. Yeah, he beat me to
that
it.
One.
So
that one's cool. I want the handbook. Like, I want someone to write an actual.
I know.
Handbook.
I see it all. They have it at Spirit, but I'm like, I don't want just a notepad. I want like a.
I want it book. Actually like written out. Right. Like, I want instructions.
That'd be interesting. But there we have it, guys. That was Ghost Encounters, our final encounters of this month long journey we're on here for Cult-tober. We decided to do, instead of doing our every other week like we usually do for Cult-tober, we decided we're going to do every week, and we have one more episode next week. We're going to be talking about the Jersey Devil, the Beast of the Barons, the 13th Child, the Jersey Devil. I'm really excited to talk about that. It's one of my favorite cryptids. It's not no Bigfoot, but it's one of my favorite cryptids. And Bailey, you don't know? Do you know a lot about the Jersey Devil? Or
I don't know a whole lot. I've been learning.
Studying.
I know, but it's like that one actually freaks me out.
It's a lot more dark than people realize. I think people think that the Jersey Devil is just a cryptid. It's like, oh, it's a flying goat or whatever.
There's a lot more
to the Jersey Devil than that.
That bitch is a demon.
Yeah, like, it's straight up. It's pretty horrific. So we're gonna be talking about that next week. Cult-tober, it's almost over. We're rolling toward the finish here. We have From Dusk Till Dawn tomorrow.
Oh boy,
Bailey's on that.
Yeah, Bailey is on that.
Yeah, she's the star of that one. So make sure you check out the review for From Dusk Till Dawn on Cult-tober Plus. Mike sent some audio clips of that, and that is an interesting episode. I'm anticipating listening to that one.
That episode helped me grow as a person and as a podcaster. Okay, it helped. We got through some milestones. Okay,
all good. Friday we have The Crow. Sunday we have the Halloween Tree book review.
Oh, so good.
Monday, Call to Campbell is back, and we're doing Evil Dead Rise. We've been waiting to do that one for a while. Figure what better way to close out Cult-tober for Call to Campbell than with Evil Dead Rise. That kind of ties, but that's the first time I ever got to see Evil Dead Rise trailer was in the Stanley Hotel.
Oh, cool.
There's an interesting connection there. Of course, on Halloween Day, next Tuesday, Bailey and I will be bringing you Jersey Devil, but also on Cult-tober Plus, you'll be getting The Addams Family, our big Cult-tober special event that we do every year. Make sure you guys check that out. It's a lot of fun. Whole gang's on deck. And that is a that's one hell of a review. I think we had a lot of fun on that one.
Oh yeah, that was great.
But until next time, I think that does it for us here. Essie, thank you for joining us. I know you're a busy man.
Thank you for having me.
You know, in between, you know, traveling to Canada and editing Cult Talk Conspiracy and putting music on Spotify. The three things you do.
Yeah, the three things I do. Follow me on Birdspeak on Spotify or Pandora or great wherever.
Music. Great music, by the way. I listened to the two singles you had out just back in September, and those were phenomenal.
Thank you. There should be one out now if everything goes according to plan. But as I was telling you guys before the podcast starts, the studio I was at, everything crashed. So we are in panic and recovery mode. So if it's not there, give Birdspeak a follow, and Favorite Shade of Blue should be out soon, hopefully. I'm gonna cry hole.
If when it releases, we'll be sure to share a link. We'll get some ears on it. But thank you for joining us.
If you're on Apple Music, for some reason they have it under This Burning World. And yes, I am complaining and trying to get it changed. Has that happened?
Under a different artist name?
Yeah.
That's awful. That is awful.
So
fucking Apple. That's awful.
Hopefully it will be fixed by then.
Hopefully so.
We can all send angry emails as well.
Oh boy, have I been already doing that. But it's fine. It's fine. No one uses iTunes anymore anyway, or Apple Music,
right? I don't
think
so. I think it's all Spotify. I think it's Spotify. Yeah. That's I know that's a large majority of our listeners, like not even comparative. I know Apple Music is like our second most popular, but Spotify is number one by a vast majority.
Yeah.
Yes, well, absolutely.
There we have it, guys. Talking about some ghosts. We talked about different ghost encounters through all sorts of different places and time. The 1800s, the 400s, BC, the 1970s, all over, and learned a lot of things along the way. That's the most important thing, right?
Were you entertained, Ty?
I was entertained. Still don't believe in ghosts, but I was entertained.
Oh. There we go. The real ghosts. That's the friends we made along the way.
Yeah, exactly. But there we have it, guys. Make sure you guys follow us at Cult Talk Net across the board, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all the stuff. X and Threads, because there's two things now. I gotta post on two fucking separate things now. But mainly Instagram. Instagram is where I'm at. Follow us on Instagram at Cult Talk Net. Keep all this crazy Cult-tober stuff we got coming. It's a loaded month and it is insanity, but doing it. We're making it work, and it's almost over. So follow us. Let us know what you guys think. Essie, where can they find you at?
They can find me on Instagram at Riley Essler, RYLEYESLER. That is basically the only social media I use. So there.
That's good enough.
One place.
Yeah, that's
Gypsy
the way to do it.
Very excited that you only use one social media. Gypsy. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, Gypsy likes all of my posts. Slides Gypsy's in my DMs. Fan. Yeah. Loves my music.
I'm honestly shocked Billy doesn't have a Gypsy Instagram account. You seem like the type.
I did at one point. I'm not going to lie to you. It was up at one point. I think it actually still is up, but I've been like, man, it's been so long since I've posted on it. I don't know how to just like be like, hi guys, this still exists. Like,
I'm still alive.
Like, it's still happening. So yeah. No, but yeah, she has one.
Well, of course. Well, with a linker so she gets some followers.
Listen, I am I am the most basic of the white bitches. I know.
Yeah.
Ty sees anything pumpkin this time of year, it immediately goes to me.
Claiming to be pagan, that's the first.
Shut the fuck up. My culture is not your costume, okay?
Damn, get ready.
All right, guys. That does it for us. Keep tuned in here. Next week, we'll be back for more stuff. But until next time, I've been Ty.
I've been Bailey.
I'm Essie.
Question everything.
Bye, friends.
Bye.